It's Essential Pittsburgh, and I'm Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune of View, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. High school football has been as important to southwestern Pennsylvania as the steel industry once was. The two were inextricably linked in the late 1950s in Braddock, and author Greg Nichols captures that spirit in his book, Striking Gridiron, A Town's Pride and a Team's Shot at Glory During the Biggest Strike in American History. Greg joins us by phone from California. Greg, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I read the book and I really enjoyed it, and so I was excited about having you on. And I first want to just set the stage by talking a little bit about this Braddock High School football team. A lot of high schools across Western Pennsylvania can claim legendary stories of their own, but what makes this one so special in your mind?
It was pretty unique, and I think it was really an intersection of just a phenomenal team at the right moment in history. In July of 1959, 500,000 steelworkers walked off the job, which remains the largest industrial work stoppage in American history. And the workers, they were expecting a quick end to the strike, which had been the pattern over the previous decade. But in 1959, things were a little different. There had been a recession the previous year. The glorious days of the post-war period had ended. Steel companies were tightening their belts a little, not interested in making concessions. So those weeks turned into months. And with fall approaching, these workers who hadn't drawn a paycheck since the walkout in July of 59, and families in places like the Mon Valley, which really epitomized the strike, were eating donated food out of cans. And so it was against that historical backdrop, that great setup, that in the small mill town of Braddock, home to Carnegie's first steel mill, the scrappy football team called the Braddock High Tigers, led by this phenomenal young coach, Chuck Flossing, had gone 46 straight games, five complete seasons, without losing. And it was on the eve of that sixth season they were in reach of the national record for consecutive games without a loss, which had been set by the great Paul Brown at Massillon Washington High School in Ohio. So, you know, as that season commenced with workers on strike, high school football was the center of life in the Mon Valley, and it was really a stage for this phenomenal team, the Braddock Tigers.
I just think that same story has played out so many times across this region. You know, especially, I mean, you know, one of my favorite things about Pittsburgh is how, you know, during the 1980s when steel collapsed for essentially the last time, that, you know, the success of the Steelers and, of course, the Pirates, but largely the Steelers during that period really buoyed the spirits of the entire city. I'm curious how important you think high school football in particular is for lifting spirits during tough times, and how important it's been for Western Pennsylvania during these many tough times.
Oh, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, sports in general have an amazing way of bringing communities together. But I think football is uniquely suited to the culture of, specifically of these working class towns in Western PA. You know, it's a gritty place. Football is a gritty sport where heroism often means like a busted nose or a broken arm. In 1958, in the big matchup between Braddock and their rival, cross-town rival, North Braddock Scott, one of these players on the Braddock team heard a pop in his shoulder after making a tackle. And the next play, he was involved in another tackle. He hopped up, jogged off the field, and took himself out. And his collarbone was sticking clean through the skin. That's an objectively terrible thing to have happen to a high schooler. But it really embodies the idea that these were hardworking men of Braddock, this idea they had of themselves and of their lives. And now that they were out of work, specifically with the story that I covered, they were out of work, weren't drawing paychecks, weren't able to support their families. There was that feeling of idleness, of uselessness. And, you know, more broadly, they were obviously, you know, now on the edge of this bigger cliff. Whether or not they knew it, their life was about to come to a screeching halt. But here were the hometown boys, you know, the Braddock Tigers on the brink of this national record. And it really drew the town together. And you're absolutely right. We've seen it play out so many other times. Most recently, the Clarendon Bears in 2013 actually broke the Tigers' previous record set in 1959 and had 66 straight games without a loss. And as your listeners, I'm sure, know, Clarendon is it's a shell of what it once was. There's a lot of pride there, a lot of anguish, and I think the team really does give something to that town.
You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. And we're talking with Greg Nichols, author of the book Striking Gridiron, about the Braddock High School Tigers football teams of the 1950s. Greg, I'm curious about your own personal story. How, because you're in California now, I think in Los Angeles, right? How did you come to learn about this team and then get so invested in Braddock and spending time here?
Yeah, you know, I was in grad school out in Boston, and I was looking for a story. This was around 2008, 2009, and Braddock was in the news quite a bit. I'm sure your listeners remember this flurry of media coverage around that time. Rolling Stone did a big feature about the mayor, John Fetterman. The New York Times did a big piece, the New York Times Magazine. So there's just all this coverage of Braddock, which obviously had been very much forgotten about by everyone outside of the region for a long time. And I was very interested in kind of seeing what was going on in Braddock for myself. A lot of the coverage was about, it was like a very nice narrative about, you know, this new mayor coming into town and people sort of coming in to rejuvenate the town. And I was romanced by that, and I hit the ground, and obviously it's a lot more complicated than it can be made out to be in a magazine feature article. But I was basically hanging around, talking with locals, talking with newcomers, trying to just sort of understand what was happening and understand all the media coverage. And I'll tell you what, if you want to write a book, you should go to Western Pennsylvania, because you guys are storytellers. This local guy named Joel Rice came to me one day while I was in Braddock. Literally had a stack of papers, just stuff he had collected from the internet, clippings. He said, "Hey, I hear you're looking for a story. You want a story? I got one for you." And literally plopped these papers in my lap. And it was the story of the Braddock High Tigers. It was, you know, told in clippings and newspaper accounts. And I just started reading through this. And, you know, it occurred to me that many of the players were still alive. The coach, Chuck Clausing, was and is still alive. And that probably, you know, they're getting up there in age. Wouldn't be that way. Wouldn't be the case for long. And it was just the right time to jump into this amazing story. And 1959, Western Pennsylvania, it was just this vibrant, crazy time. It was a time when everything was about to change. It was sort of the height of this great American industry. Western Pennsylvania was very much this region of national pride. And so it was just such a great topic to cover.
I'm curious from the perspective of writing the book. In the story, in the narrative, you recreate a lot of conversations. You have players talking to each other. You have Coach Clausing talking. Were those things where people actually recounted conversations to you, or did you sort of, you know, go and do the research and create the scene and then let your imagination go a little bit in terms of how they talk to each other?
Yeah, at the risk of running afoul of a libel lawyer, the way it works is that you do the absolute best reporting you can, and you're upfront about what this book is. I didn't want to do. I'm a journalist in my day job, and that's a wonderful profession, and I love doing it. But I didn't want this book to be straight journalism in the sense that it was a mere reporting of what I could verify with two independent sources and all of that. I wanted to bring it alive because I thought the story, it deserved that liveliness. You know, it deserved. There are these stories about, like, let's say a kid going to a summer camp, the Tiger summer camp, and a bear bulb hanging from this freezing cold summer camp. And the kids would have to warm their jock straps on this bear bulb because it was so cold. That's the kind of thing you can report out in very, like, prosaic prose. But I thought it was so much better to bring it to life. So my strategy was to interview these people, to get as much information as I could, to ask them what kinds of conversations they had had, what kinds of friendships they had had, and try to get really the flavor of those friendships, of their interactions, and then to start constructing dialogue and then feed that back to them, to really allow them to filter it in some way and then feed it back to me. And I think the result of that process is, you know, I hope a book that reads more like a novel than you know, a work of pure reportage.
It definitely reads like a novel. You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. And we're talking with Greg Nichols, author of the book Striking Gridiron, about the Braddock High School Tigers football teams of the 1950s. Greg, I wanted to ask you about the issue of race, and it comes right off the cover of your book. I actually have a book myself coming out next month, The Color of Sundays, about the first blacks in the NFL. And I know from the reporting on that this time in the 1950s when Coach Clausing is putting his teams together was not an easy time for having blacks and whites together on the football field. And yet Coach Clausing did it. And I'm wondering what you think drove him to be so inclusive about his players. And then secondly, why you felt it was important to have that image on your cover and to be such a big part of your story.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. To the first part of that question, Clausing is just an extraordinary guy. You know, it's not even right to say that he was ahead of his time. He's just one of these good human beings who just has this sense of justice and what is right and what is wrong, which is another reason I was so drawn to the story. Yeah, Western Pennsylvania, in the middle of the century, that's a tough time. As a lot of your listeners probably know, a lot of what was happening in the steel industry was then reflected in society at large. And black workers were sort of the last to arrive in the steel industry. During the Great Migration, they were hired as scabs, which created a lot of strife and angst with white workers. And then, you know, steel, that upward escalator effect that the steel industry had for people sort of came to a screeching halt while they were at the lowest rung, those black workers. So it's racial issues. You can't overlook that in a book like this. And it was just this exemplary team that had just about to the man even number of black players and white players. And the fans were, the parents of these players would sit together in the stands. And it was just this guy, this by sheer strength of personality, Chuck Clausing, was able to bring them together. And, you know, they endured quite a bit of racism, which Clausing, again, by sheer strength of personality, enabled them to sort of overcome and ignore. But most of the teams in the region at the time were not completely integrated. There were maybe one or two exceptional black players who were just so good that coaches couldn't deny them a spot on their squad. But for the most part, it was predominantly white teams at that time. And yeah, you know, football has this great ability to reflect the society in which it's played. And I think that's the reason it's so central to this book. You know, 1950s, you can't cover the 1950s without talking about race in America. And Western Pennsylvania was a really great spotlight to have that discussion. And here was a football team that was, you know, quite inclusive, playing other football teams that weren't. It was just, you know, the symbolism, the themes were too good not to write about, not to explore. And yeah, I think the players, their ability to play with one another really is a reflection of their coaches and specifically of Clausing, who is just this phenomenal guy. I can't say enough about him as a person.
I want to get your perspective too on Western Pennsylvania. I think it helps that you're not here. You're looking in from the outside. Certainly, the city has changed a lot since the 1950s. Of course, you know, steel is no longer the dominant industry that it once was. You know, we've got this, you know, biotechnology hub, and the city's environmentally friendly, and we've moved away from industry. And I'm looking at the young men across Western Pennsylvania too, and many of them are looking at football and saying, it's too dangerous. The chances of getting a concussion are too great. Maybe I'll play lacrosse. Maybe I'll do soccer. I'll do something else. How much do you think football will remain a core element of the culture here in Western Pennsylvania as we kind of evolve as a city?
Oh, man, I think that's a big question. You know, like, will football survive? Yeah, I think undoubtedly it will. And I think you can just point to the fact that in the midst of the national conversation over concussions, which really, like, reached this head last year, the NFL had its highest viewership ever. So it's not a matter, I think, of whether football will or won't survive. And I think, you know, a lot of people do frame it like that, which isn't how you framed it. And I think framing it like will it survive or won't it makes it too easy to dismiss this really very crucially important conversation about safety. So I think the question is, how do we make it safer? And you know, I actually have a kid on the way, and I found out yesterday morning that it's going to be a boy.
Congratulations.
My son.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. But this really drives this issue home for me. Am I going to let my kid play high school football? I played high school football. I got knocked out twice, unconscious, and that was a real point of pride, obviously, when you're playing high school football. But that gives me a lot of pause now, you know, now that my perspective has suddenly shifted so dramatically. I think that the answer is that there are ways to mitigate risk. Clausen embodied that. He never used to practice his players with using helmets. He would always mandate they have their helmets off and their pads off, meaning that these weren't full contact practices, which is huge. This was an era when Bear Bryant at Texas A&M was very famously depriving kids of water and almost like killed one of them. And here was Clausen, this forward-thinking coach who was protecting his kids from concussion decades before that was an issue that people recognized widely. There are over a million high school football players out there. And I think, unfortunately, the reality right now is that the vast majority of those games and those players playing games without medical personnel on the sideline.
Well, Greg,
I've heard something.
Well, I'm going to have to jump in because the we're out of time, which is unfortunate because I'm really enjoying the interview. But thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. And good luck with the book and good luck to the Steelers season.
Thank you. We've been talking with author Greg Nichols, whose book, Striking Gridiron, chronicles the remarkable Braddock High School Tigers football team of the 1950s. Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, WESA board member Tom Petziger will be in the host chair. Tom and his guests will look at the biotech industry to find out if the Steel City has what it takes to compete with Boston and the Bay Area. Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.fm or as a podcast in iTunes. I'm Andy Conti, investigative reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, in for Paul Guggenheimer.
This is Pittsburgh's NPR News Station, 90.